Because to see him, should we move that over there? So
you should.
You know what I mean?
Like, always just be looking.
Just listen to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a pod, so like it doesn't have to be too like super formal. Because
okay,
yeah,
cool, cool.
Yeah. All right. Kyle, ready?
I'm ready.
Cool. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome. This is Tar Heel 24/7, a UNC basketball podcast. Make sure to like, share, subscribe to the channel. Without further ado, I want to bring in someone that has just joined the network, Kyle Tucker, who's the new director of college basketball content. So before we get into the UNC and all that good stuff, kind of tell us about yourself and what you're kind of bringing to this wonderful company.
Yeah, first of all, I was going to tell you that when I started covering Kentucky basketball in 2011, December of 2011, the first big game I covered at Rupp Arena was there was this famous play. This guy, Anthony Davis, and I can't remember who the other guy was. It was like came down to the last shot.
Yeah, it might have been me, and I tell people that wasn't my shot. That was Zeller's shot. I had to shoot it, but yeah, that was a time.
No, that was incredible. I mean, that game was an all-timer. There have been some all-timers between Kentucky and North Carolina. Never forget the way that arena sounded that day. But I covered Kentucky basketball for a long time, covered national college basketball at The Athletic and The New York Times. I've been away from the game for about a year and a half. I went and did some agency work in the pro sports arena. Mm-hmm. Just when I thought I was out, you guys pulled me back in. College basketball is having a moment right now. This is as good. I mean, there's a million headaches around the sport. There are a lot of problems to solve, but the actual product, I mean, you know as well as I do, it's pretty awesome right now. The games are great. The freshman class is an all-timer. It's fun. We have free agency for better or worse, and that makes people excited about the sport. When this opportunity came up to lead 247's national college basketball coverage, it's a dream come true for me. It's the best sport in the world. It's the most fun. We're about to head into literally the greatest month of the year, the greatest sporting event in my book, and I can't wait for it.
Yeah, I think kind of the product is, I mean, first of all, obviously people are getting paid, so there's more retention of better players. And I'd go as far as to say, like, the product, because of, you know, with NBA and the college, now people have that kind of commitment to the college basketball the way people are committing to professional sports, because it is a professional sport. I think it's changing the game, how money's being brought in. And I mean, I personally look forward to these big time matchups more than I ever have can remember. I used to be an all NBA guy. Mm-hmm. I work in college basketball, but I'm shocked at just, like you said, the quality. Do you think that the NIL and kind of the money around the sport has changed the dynamic of it?
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing, I mean, how many guys, just think, I was just talking about 2011. If you think back to that one and done era, how many guys, or even if they were two and done, like how many guys left school much earlier than they would have left school if they'd had an opportunity to capitalize? How many of those guys that John Calipari coached at Kentucky, you know, maybe not, obviously none of his biggest stars, probably, although some of them could have made an absolute fortune. I mean, think about what A.J. DeBonsa is getting at BYU. But certainly that next level of guy would have stuck around, and now they are sticking around. I think what now what we're seeing in college basketball is what people used to theorize, like what if some of these five-star kids who had good freshman seasons but feel like they got to go because they got to cash in, what if they stayed? You know, there's positionally big guys, right? Like the big guys, you know, right there at North Carolina, Armando. I mean, he, you know, it was going to be hard for a guy like him. It was going to be hard for a guy like Oscar Tshiebwe in the modern NBA to get their chance to make their money. And now they can stay in school and do it. And you know, chase championships, and you've got continuity, and you've got, you know, you've got guys that are good enough to be in the NBA playing college basketball, and that makes it better, makes it a lot more fun.
I stayed for 3 years for free, so I definitely would have stayed. So that wouldn't even been a question. So Moving on. So we're going to talk about, this is a Tar Heel podcast, so we're going to talk about the UNC Duke win. What better way to kind of talk about it than, you know, it was a signature win, largest comeback in Duke in a quarter century. Kind of, what are your thoughts on the UNC win and what that has done to this team or this season per se?
Well, it's huge for the team, for one. It's huge for their coach, I think, for two. I think you're less than a month ago, you've lost three out of four games. You lose both legs of the West Coast trip. You know, the noise is getting pretty loud. Now you're sitting here, you've won five in a row. You won at Virginia. And then, you know, the absolute cherry on top, the thing that has, I think, probably healed any wounds for that fan base right now is to go beat your rival and to beat them in that dramatic fashion, to have sort of a beloved guy who's been there for a while, the kind of player that fans want to root for right now in this era. To be the guy to make that legendary shot, it has all the, you know, it's all the ingredients. It's the perfect recipe of the kind of win that makes your season. I mean, obviously you got to go keep going, but I think I'm on a totally different trajectory right now. You can't go to Miami and stub your toe, but the way the program feels, the energy around it right now, and you know better than I do, but it seems quite a bit different than it was 3.5 weeks ago. And that's a big jolt for the coach. And I think probably for that group of players, you got to feel like you can beat anybody, because Duke looked like they were as good as anybody in America coming into that game.
And you know, even with Caleb Wilson, you know, how he played in the first half, especially just, you know, was fearless almost. Why is he still on the outskirts of these conversations, whether it's the draft, right? Like, it's like we got a top three, then Caleb Williams is our next guy. We ask for the year, Caleb Williams the next guy. Why has he not moved into the conversation?
I think he's moving that way. I think smart people are moving him into that conversation. I can remember right before I got out of college basketball, being at the Peach Jam and watching Caleb Wilson and talking to coaches there. And he was really impressive. There were things he does that some of these other guys don't do. I mean, I think he's every bit, he absolutely belongs in that conversation. He's every bit on the level of those other two or three guys that are mentioned over and over and over again. But part of it is just, this is a ridiculous class. I mean, there what's 8-9 deep of freshmen. I think last night was the sixth or seventh freshman to score 40 plus in a game. Michael Brown Jr. at Louisville, an absurd game, 10 threes. I think it's now seven, I think five or six at the high major level. And I'm sure we're going to talk about it, but this Miami game coming up for North Carolina. Yeah. Shelton Henderson is not even anywhere in that conversation. He's a five-star freshman. He's averaging 15-5 on any given night. He can bully you. It is a ridiculous freshman class. But to me, Caleb Wilson, when it's all said and done, it wouldn't stun me if he's the best of the group. I mean, it wouldn't stun me for any of those guys. I don't think there's like this huge separation, but I would say the top four or five, it could be any of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think his ceiling, right, is significantly higher. Even like a Peterson DeBonza, right? Like, I think DeBonza probably has the highest ceiling. Peterson is really good. I think Boozer is – he's going to be fine, right? He's going to be a solid 10-year guy, I think, just going to be maybe a couple, you know, some all-stars, all-pros, like, but superstardom, I think Caleb, if all things go well, according to plan, per se, with the organization, and I keep hearing this KG comp thrown around, and everyone's just so scared to, like, just lean into it. I am, too. Obviously, KG was a generational talent. How do you feel about the KG comp, or is there a comp that you see in him?
Yeah, I don't hate it. I mean, I like that long-rangey, super athletic freak, you know, who can and do a million things. I think that, like, the interesting thing when you talk, like, think about ceiling is just, like close your eyes and imagine, like, the best you've ever seen each of these guys play. Like, what if we're thinking about ceiling, like, there have been some moments I've seen Caleb Wilson where it was like, wow, that's as good as I've seen anybody do it. And so I don't think he's mashed the button as many times as some of these other guys. And maybe that's why he's not in the conversation. He hasn't had a 40-point game yet. Right. But I think when you look at, like, if you flash on the screen his finest performance against those other guys, it's going to be right there. So, you know, I'd hate to put KG on anybody.
I'm scared. Yeah. I'm like, see it. I really do. But to put KG on him is, I mean,
he's really good though. I mean, I think what we're seeing too is all these teams, just about all the teams that you think could make a real run in the oldest era in college basketball, right? Like in this time where we're just talking about NILs made all these guys stay. We got like 30-year-olds with that are collecting their NBA pensions trying to get back into college and play. Like, it's the oldest era in college basketball. Mm-hmm. And yet the guys who are sort of making headlines, the guys who are on the teams that you think can make a run, they all have one of these guys. They all have one of these super elite freshmen, because it's great to have experience. It's great to have leadership. All those things matter. It's great to have continuity. It's great to, share the ball, all those things. But how many championship teams haven't had the one guy, you just like put it in his hands and he's going to take over. And that's what this freshman class is bringing to the table.
I'm kind of moving on to the bigger picture, like UNC's season, 5-4 quad one games. They're a number 5 seed in the CBS Sports Bracketology. They beat Kansas, Kentucky, and Duke. And you saw what Kansas did last night without DP.
Yes.
5 seed going to the tournament, right? Maybe top 4 in the ACC. Is that considered a successful season for Carolina basketball?
I mean, having covered Kentucky for a long time and then written about national college basketball and some of the other blue bloods, like, I think that expectation is really similar. Like at Kentucky, that'd be like, okay, it's not a failure of a season, but who's going to say it's a success? I think the win against Duke, like, put a pin in that one, because that, like, that elevates, even if you're disappointed in some other pieces, that elevates your season. The fact that what you just said, I think, what is it, the 80s or early 90s? The last time somebody beat
81 Jordan's championship season. So
the last time somebody beat Kansas, Kentucky, and Duke all in the same season. And oh, by the way, one at a really good Virginia team. I mean, you got wins over 4 teams that have won a national title in the last decade or last 15 years. That Virginia's I wouldn't say blue blood, but they've been at the top of the sport for the last 15 or 20 years. That's an impressive, taken by itself, that's an impressive season. I think it's that three out of 4 stretch where, none of those were great teams that beat them, and 2 of them were not particularly good at all. It puts a little damper. It raises some questions. I would just say work to do. Like,
yep.
I think they put themselves in a position to not be a 5 seed or a 4 seed. They've got, if you go on a run here and finish this season strong, you've got a chance to go much higher than that. I think everybody just remains – tiny bit skeptical about Carolina until they see them string a few more together.
Yeah, a 5 seed seems a little low, but I'm a company man. I'm rocking with my guys doing the bracketology, so I'll have a chat with them maybe when I go to HQ or something when I'm down that way. One last thing before we kind of move into Miami. How did you feel about the court storming? Like, shit, because I was playing, Kansas did court storm, and Kansas, they did not storm the court.
Yeah.
How do you feel about UNC court storming against Duke?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a tough one, because like, they don't storm the court at Kentucky. They don't really storm the court at Kansas. They don't, there's a lot of places like that where it's kind of like a point of pride that you don't do it. Mm-hmm. I'm also, I saw, speaking of that same year we were just talking about, your year against Kentucky, their one regular season loss was at Indiana, and it was one of the scariest court storms I've ever seen. People were like over top of us at Indiana because they had beat Kentucky. And Darius Miller, who missed the final or was the defender on the Watford shot, fell down as it happened and was like flooded over by people. And they were worried about him. And, Calipari and Kentucky basically refused to go back there after that. And so when it's dangerous like that, and I know Shire came out and said somebody got punched or whatever and was very upset about it, the safety matters. But I'm also not like, a super moralist about like, you should never storm the court or you're too good to storm the court. I mean, what makes college basketball better than any other product is the environments. Like, the NBA is a better on-court product. I'm not going to argue that with anybody. But like what is around it is what makes college basketball so much fun. You're not going to see anywhere in the NBA an Allen Fieldhouse or the way Rupp sounded when Anthony Davis blocked your shot.
Loudest I've ever heard. I've never heard of reading that. Rupp is the loudest thing I've been to in my life, not even close.
Or what the Dean Dome sounded like when you beat Duke, or what Cameron sounds like when they, you know, beat Carolina. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, the emotion and the passion and the fact that it's not sterile and the fact that it is a little messy and that people's, you know, have their shirts off and they're painted and they might, like, you know, they might get slightly dangerous as they storm the court. I mean, you want to keep people safe, but it also is what makes college basketball special. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be passionate. As long as everybody gets out of there in one piece, you know, I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I don't have like a grand take on the court storm other than college basketball is supposed to be fun. College basketball fan bases are more fun than anyone else. And, just everybody get home in one piece.
Yeah. And I want to give people an inside perspective of the court storming, because it's not necessarily about court storming because we upset a team at Carolina. That's not why they court storm. It's a freaking party. Yeah. We're not storming the court because, you know, oh, we beat Duke and they're number four seed. We're storming the court because we're running the Franklin Street. Like, it's a celebration. So
you guys are storming an entire city block.
Exactly. So, like, you know, when I see the public kind of like, you know, I was reading some articles and people are praising Kansas for not court storming. Like, I personally, when we beat Duke my second year to win the ACC regular season title, they stormed the court as well. Now, it was a championship celebration. We cut the nets. We had got the trophy and all that. So we had hung a banner at the moment. But, I mean, I remember that moment to this day, and I am so happy that the students in Carolina weren't, you know, and the Carolina administration were, like, cool enough to say, look, let's enjoy this and celebrate this. So, hey, look, Kansas, you guys did well last night. I hate that you can't storm the court because you guys are just so good. But Carolina was storming every time we beat Duke. Even if Duke was the 25th seed, I think the buzzer beater, we were storming the court. I don't think it was the ranking Duke. So, you know, take it easy on us out there.
I'm with you. I don't think anybody needs to, like, get their hand slapped for that. And, like, a court storm to me is a tension release. Like, so even if you're a proud program, if you've had, like, this moment where you're down or you're worried about, like, are we still – you know, are we still a blue blood, right? Are we slipping in the blue blood rankings? Yep, well, yep, we beat Kansas, Kentucky, and Duke all in the same season. It's a tension release. Like, Kansas, they haven't lost a home Monday night game in like 30 years.
I mean, 40-0. Is it 39 or 40-0? I saw
Bill,
that.
I think 40 self is 40-0 on Big Monday. And then I think overall Monday home games, I think Matt Norlander put out, it was like, they're like, I think it's like 60 or 70-0, some crazy number. So why would they storm the court? Like, I'm sure they absolutely expected they were going to beat that team because they always win in that moment because it's a terrifying environment and so good for them. But if they had stormed the court, I wouldn't have blinked.
Yeah, someone texted me about what happened to the Kansas game. I said Fog Island. That's all that was right there. So,
and Floyd Badunga was
ridiculous for sure. So, all right. So, kind of scheduling ahead, looking ahead, Miami preview. Now, this was always a really, even when I was there, like, kind of like sketchy, trappy game.
Yeah,
because you're flying down to Florida. It feels good outside. It's just a different environment. Miami's 12-2 at home. Both 1-score losses. They rank 11th nationally in field goal percentage. They don't take many threes, but they rebound, and they got really good guards. The good guards part scares me. Tell me what you think about this Miami team and the preview of the matchup a little bit.
I mean, it feels to me like if you were like, ask ChatGPT, give me the parameters of a perfect trap game for a team mm-hmm. that just beat its rival. Mm-hmm. It is traveling that far, going on the road, playing a solid team that's like maybe doesn't have your attention because they're not ranked. They don't really they are a top 50 team themselves, but they haven't beaten a top 50 team, so we still don't really know how good Miami is. But they've got a really I think energetic, really good hire in their young coach Jay Lucas, who was a Duke assistant and also a Kentucky assistant. I knew Jay when he was at Kentucky. He's terrific. Players love him. He's brought in some really good talent. You know, you've got Malik Renaud, the Indiana transfer, who's 20 a game. You got Trey Donaldson, who's like a like an NFL like safety playing in the backcourt, who's got huge experience playing on really good teams at Auburn and Michigan, transferred in, is playing well. And we mentioned Shelton Henderson. I mean, you got a 5-star freshman who's, you know, 15-5, and he's not even in that conversation of these great freshmen. And so there's plenty of talent there. They're what, I think 18-5. Like I said, this is and for them too, this is their statement opportunity. The chance to get Carolina at home coming off a win over Duke. Like, their record is good, their resume is light, and this is their chance. Like, now we can get this marquee win at home. And so, you know, is there an emotional hangover? I mean, we just talked about a court storming, all the, you know, Franklin Street, right? Like, everybody just had this huge party in Chapel Hill. You know, emotionally, how do you bring yourself back to the center if you're Carolina and say, the problem for us is we have all these good wins and we have some kind of stupid losses. Like, how do we not take another one? Let's dial in and get that done. So, it's a great challenge for them. I think it's an opportunity to sort of like validate this 5-game winning streak they're on by just taking care of business. Like, you're better than this team. They're good. They're a good team, but you're more talented. You've got more hay in the barn than they do. So, like, go take care of business. I think I would be very impressed with them if you can back up that emotional win with a good solid road win.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Trey Donaldson, Henderson, you know, Washington, Renew, those guys, they're capable of beating anybody in the country. And like you said, they're coming in thinking like, okay, they're in the first four in. They're kind of on that fringes. They're a bubble team.
Absolutely.
If they beat Carolina, they're in the tournament. So I think that's got to be the message on both sides, right? Hey, look, this is an opportunity. We just beat Duke for them to get into the tournament, and this is an opportunity for us to validate ourselves against a good team. And you do worry about the hangover, but I'll tell you this, Carolina party scene ain't what it used to be, so maybe them boys got some red. So, I'm hoping, because it's just not what it used to be. I'm just put it out there like that.
Is he not here still a thing? Like, I haven't been
he's
there
He's not
while.
Here is a thing, but, like, okay. You know, the kids aren't going, the kids aren't putting a wristband on and getting all you can drink beer no more these days, man.
Really? I've still got a he's not here cup in my house somewhere.
Exactly. So, you know, I bet they got a lot more wrist than we would have. I'll tell you that. We'll just put that out there. So,
I know your audience knows that story, right? Like, the story of he's not here. I love telling that. I didn't know it until I went there.
Yeah. You know, I don't even know what is the story of he's not.
I believe the story is. Yeah. I'm sure we'll get blown up in the mentions if I'm wrong. But I believe the story is this bar in Chapel Hill is like people when Jordan was in school there, people would call all the time, and be like, "Is he there? Is he there? Is he there?" And they'd always be like, "He's not here. He's not here. He's not here." I think that's it.
That sounds.
If that's not it, that's a great story, and that's
that sounds. Either way, that sounds legit. Yeah. But yeah, he's not. Like, that's still kicking, but. I don't know, man. It's a different world. But like I said, that's a good thing for the Tar Heels because we'd have been running up and down Franklin Street all night. I don't know if they have that type of. I was there a couple weeks ago. I didn't see that type of environment. So,
okay.
Hopefully, the boys got some rest. But I just want to say thank you for coming on, man. Yeah. Best of luck. Obviously, we'll be working together, and I'll see you a lot. So appreciate that. Best of luck, and I'll see you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I promise I won't bring up a painful memory every time I come on.
Well, you know, I tell people all the time, I shed tears, man. I knocked over a Gatorade can. I was crying because
wow,
I felt like that shot was in, right? And me and AD always laugh about it, and people bring it up on Twitter, so it's fun, man. It's I'm etching history the wrong way, but guess what? I'm etching history. We'll call it that.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. As always, thank you for watching on YouTube and listening wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to check out TarHill247.com for the latest wall-to-wall coverage of Carolina athletics. See you guys next time.